Hello and welcome to Slay Sunday. I'm your host, Louise Hazel. And in this week's episode, we've got Darren Beckett, transformational speaker, healer, physical therapist and personal trainer. Darren. Yes.
Si, señorita.
Indeed. So we met in our building. We both train in the same gym. We're both freelance. You have a number of strings to your bow. Transformational speaker, healer, can we say?
Sure.
You practice meditation, you also do body work, but you, I remember us having a conversation, a few months ago about, your, background in performance sports. So you used to work with elite athletes, didn't you?
I did.
Tell me a little bit more about that.
So I played baseball for 18 years, all the way up into Division I collegiate, and performance has always been a part of my family. My dad was a martial artist. My mom has two brothers, very active outdoors. And so there was always a drive to be at the peak. And I was really blessed with coaches in baseball and other sporting or other activities that lended myself to really love the tweaking. Like, how do we tweak little things to get the extra edge, right?
Yep.
You don't usually win a race by a lot. It's usually by a little, and everyone's trying to get little bits over. Mm-hmm. I played baseball, so it was all about precision and pitching, and there's a lot of mental action in that as well. Mm. So when I graduated with a degree in conflict mediation and organizational communication, which is a different side, I became a personal trainer for originally celebrities on set, so stretching and getting them ready for specific roles. And in that mix, there's always a group of athletes, and the particular place I was at, working at, had a dual kind of like, we're going to help people get ready for film. We're also going to help professional athletes. And so for a few years, I was really ingrained in what makes a good performance athlete. Mm-hmm. And that quickly pivoted after I realized what happens after these people are athletes.
Right.
Right. We always talk about when we're athletes to maintain a healthy balance of life. And so, as we know, it's very difficult to hit the pinnacle of being a successful performance athlete. Mm-hmm. And even if you are successful, there's an even smaller percentage of you being in the limelight and therefore getting some sort of, whether it's a scholarship or some sort of cash bonus. And so I really wanted to know what are athletes going to have to do when they stop playing? How do they need to change their lives? And so using that as a marker for what is being tested. So I think right now, veterinary medicine and performance sports are the two most funded spaces for innovative tech, innovative programming. So that's where all the money's being spent. And so I wanted to use that knowledge that I had gained and apply it to the everyday person. People who are living regular lives with extraordinary challenges, opportunities for seeing gifts in their life that could really transform similarly to how an athlete transforms their audience.
And what type of athletes were you working with? What sports were you coming into contact with on a daily basis?
Tons. Basketball professionals, sprinters, Olympic lifting athletes, kind of some ad hoc ones. I worked with a fencing athlete, worked with a few gymnasts. And oddly enough, a few people who were in para athletics.
Yep.
So people who with disabilities. And so being able to take challenges and then apply these same tools was something that I just love doing.
And so was your role pretty much hands-on, body work, physiotherapy, or was it training? What was the deal when you were working?
Yeah, at that point it was personal training. Yep. I was being groomed to be a leader and manager in this particular boutique gym. And I had access to work one-on-one with the chiropractor, the acupuncturist, the massage therapist. And so looking at all of these different modalities and going, wow, there's not one size fits all. We've got to blend some things. And not only that, there's a conversation to be had amongst all of us practitioners.
Right.
What are they doing? What was their goal today? How can I enhance that? How do I create something that is going to be useful in this moment? Because that's a big thing for me is actually helping people to get to some sort of destination at the end of a session.
Yeah. What I found, which was quite interesting from my sporting career as an elite athlete, was that the thing you just said about that kind of personalization. So if you're working with, you know, a basketball player, how do you make sure that his program is tailored specifically for him? What I found as I was coming through the ranks was that there was very much this one size fits all approach. And we were all doing the same running sessions, you know, the same technical sessions. And it wasn't until I later kind of changed my coach and worked with somebody one on one that I was there was able to be that specificity for me as an athlete, as opposed to, right, you know, today we're doing this sprint session because that's what the group's doing.
Yeah.
So that was quite interesting. What the thing you said about communication and different modalities and then being bendable to effectively what that person had done during their day. How do you find that pertains to real life, i.e. people outside of performance sport and in the real world with given what you do? Because I feel like every time we speak, you're just saying that you come from, you had massages today, personal training, and you seem to kind of have this all-round ability to help people move forward towards their goals.
Thanks. Yeah, the equation's the same. Most of us are running through the day with so much information. We're only using a very small percentage of it. And so if I come to a session and I just give more information, it's not always helpful. Sometimes they're just their brains fried.
Mm.
So I always like to take the approach that we're always starting from a blank slate.
Mm-hmm.
So if that person is, I'm assessing during the session, when they come in, what's their current state?
Mm.
And I may have three different plans, four different plans, but it's not about my plan. It's about them.
Mm-hmm.
It's their session. And so using what I've formulated and then kind of trickling that down to the task to be done
mm-hmm.
today. And so when we deviate from that task, we're now not helping us finish that task.
Mm-hmm.
So also, people are great. It's just part of our system and the amount of information that's in our world, where our attention span is very small.
Mm.
So I would much rather someone create a skill than try and just get through work.
Mm.
And I think that can be applied to really anything in life. If I wanted to start my own business, I'm going to have to start with basics. Mm. I can't just start doing things at a masterful level.
Right. So you're saying perhaps skill acquisition is a foundation?
Say it again.
Skill acquisition is a foundation.
I think skill acquisition is not just a foundation, but it's how we progress as well.
Mm.
If you want to shoot a three-pointer, you start with, you know, a layup,
mm-hmm.
and then you just keep working yourself back.
Yeah.
And then also, because there's age, you know, as we're growing up, we get stronger. And so from an athletic component, there are things that we want to hit the edge on and other things that we would rather develop skills.
Mm.
For instance, we're told not to throw curveballs at a young age because we could ruin our shoulder.
Mm.
And that's very true. If you start spinning the ball and it just starts to work weird things in the body
mm-hmm.
and the body's growing.
Before
and
you're
so,
fully developed.
Yeah. And so a lot of my friends who threw really hard and had the best curveball when I was young, they got injuries into their when they started playing at a higher level.
It's crazy because it's such a fine line, I think, in performance sport. I know all of the there have been a number of kind of the gifted child that never made it to elite level because they were pushed too hard.
Sure.
Their training was, you know, already exceeding the expectations of a person of that age. And there was both, you know, sometimes a physical and mental breakdown that occurred as a result of pushing, you know, young kids too far towards performance sport.
It's really difficult, from what I've seen, for people to know their future in that regard.
Mm.
I've seen people that have been the stars for, you know, a number of years, and then one day they'd have a bad game and all of a sudden they can't get on the mound anymore.
Mm-hmm.
I've also seen people who have been in the trenches. They've been the assistant coach. They've been the person who's in the background, and then all of a sudden they get one chance and they do amazing.
Mm-hmm.
I think that's ultimately why I got out of performance sports, because not that I wasn't interested in it, but I was more interested in what happens after.
So tell me what it is you do when you find somebody who is post sport or, you know, going through something that they need help with from you. Talk to me about how you put them back together.
Yeah, great question. I would consider myself, amongst the thousands of terms that people have called me or I've called myself in the past, my skills are working with the body. I view the body as an instrument. Mm-hmm. And so I can see where there's inhibition, where there's problems, and then we can kind of tackle them from many points of view. So in a way, I'm a recovery coach.
Mm.
But then recovery kind of sounds like we have to recover from something.
Yes.
So I would much rather call myself a vitality coach.
Mm-hmm.
Because there's a difference between the word athlete and the word I'm athletic.
Yes.
Right? So you can be athletic and not be an athlete.
Mm-hmm.
So athleticism we talk about is about being a good leader. It's about putting in the work and being smart.
Mm-hmm.
And so having more of a strategy.
Mm.
And so we need a strategy for our livelihood in life. And right now our role models are maybe not the best health-wise. So what you and I know takes, it's like if we just went out there and did our sport, our bodies would lean down. We start to look a different way. People start to see us in a different light. But as soon as I stop doing that and I just start, you know, being healthy again,
yeah.
My body starts to get a little bigger. I start to feel more like on the ground.
Mm-hmm.
My skin may look a little bit brighter. We forget how much makeup is being put on in the model photo shoots and all the photoshopping.
Mm.
And so vitality has nothing to do with how we look.
Mm.
It has to do with how we feel.
Yes.
And so I'm always after, how do you feel?
Yes.
And feelings are elusive.
Mm.
There's a neuroscientist that developed a scale that says that first, you feel physiological response.
Mm-hmm.
Then that physiological response turns into an emotion.
Yes.
And emotions drive the current of the feeling.
Mm-hmm.
The feeling becomes a thought, and then we act on that thought.
Mm.
Up until very recently, sports performance has been based off of action, result,
yep.
Don't get the result, change the action.
Yeah.
However, there's a deep process like the glacier that's much deeper underneath that's happening.
Mm.
And if we can tune into that, we may be able to help that person get more performance.
I think that mood and happiness and all of those things with regards to performance are inextricably linked.
Sure. But we've also seen people who are angry and they hit home run after home run.
Oh,
so it's
would
like
you say that's because they're kind of directing their anger and channeling it?
Sure, but that's not a conversation that anyone's having at the fitness level.
Mm.
There's very, very few coaches that I know of in the world that are focusing on like the feeling of my person. They may want them to like get good sleep, right? Like don't go out party tonight, like make sure you get your sleep. But there's a whole process happening underneath that. How did you talk to them? What was the kind of communication?
Mm.
And some people respond better to different parenting techniques, right?
Yes.
So if someone was more aggressive or their parents were more aggressive, they may respond to aggressiveness.
Mm.
And that may help them in the sport, right? Tiger Woods was an amazing athlete and then it just crumbled when his emotions came into picture.
Mm.
So I think at some point we're all going to have to face our emotions. My process, which is also delving into all the different cultures that have looked at health and wellness, for instance, Chinese medicine, South American medicine, techniques developed in Europe that were based around homeopathy, using nature as a way to help revitalize ourselves.
Mm-hmm.
But that's a process that doesn't happen overnight. It's a process that happens over lifetimes.
Mm.
There are genetic things that we pass along. And so there's stuff that you and I are dealing with that previous generations had to deal with.
Mm.
And we may not have to deal with it anymore, and yet we're still responding to it.
Right.
So this deeper current, which is about the evolution of human health, not human performance. And I think we blend those two a lot.
What was really interesting about the thing you said there, the thing that popped into my mind is the sentiment at the moment with amongst my African American friends that goes back to slavery. And if we look at police brutality and, you know, all of the things that are happening politically in the US at the moment, what you were just saying literally resonated, because unlike my friends in the UK, there is this kind of deep-seated feeling of unease. And that's still that kind of reminder, perhaps, that this is a country that they live in, that they helped build, etc. And ancestors came over via slavery. But there's this feeling of being unwelcome.
Yeah. And that affects your health.
Mm.
We can't disregard that. Now, what I'm saying has scientific proof. However, it's not nearly the amount that one might need to feel comfortable with the results.
Mm. And the interesting thing is, you know, I think the interesting link, if I look at the statistics, especially amongst women's health, the demographics with the greatest levels of like obesity and type 2 diabetes, the biggest health risks are amongst those Black and Latina women in the US. And so I'm kind of like, maybe this, you know, for me, I feel like these two things are kind of inextricably linked.
Sure.
That feeling of unease and that the mind being consumed with things that perhaps people in America who, you know, didn't have to deal with slavery because it wasn't part of their heritage, don't have to deal with on a daily basis. I think this is a really interesting thing mentally, physically, to be undone through generation to generation. Really, really, really interesting. Really,
we live in an interesting time, and I personally believe that it is going in a good direction.
Mm.
I'm more of an optimist,
mm-hmm.
And I think that's part of me creating the life that I've created. I work hard, and then when I get tired, I'm doing what I love.
Mm.
So even though it's challenging, and even though I feel like, yeah, it's like I've driven 3 hours today already.
Mm-hmm.
But the time I spent with these people, the amount of change that we were able to get through, some more emotional, some more physical, some more mental, some blended, that gives me the ability to feel more optimistic about where we're going.
Mm.
And also because we're having a discussion about it. We couldn't have these discussions before.
Mm.
We couldn't post these on something called the internet.
Right.
And then where everyone can view them and be a part of the discussion.
Mm-hmm.
So I think in that regard, it's really exciting.
Mm-hmm.
And when it comes to health, we're in kindergarten right now. We're just beginning to understand.
What do you do at the end of a long day? Because we literally sat down in here maybe some 30 minutes ago and you pulled out the oil. I put a little bit of the oil on my wrist. And what have you got here? Clarity?
It's Clarity. So it's got peppermint, jasmine, marjoram, basil, and lavender.
Mm.
It's a blend. Each oil, to be really quick, essential oils are basically plant extracts,
mm-hmm.
yeah? But when we extract it a certain way, the chemical information is retained.
Mm-hmm.
So when we say a really good oil is good, it's because it's retained its natural state.
Yeah.
That's very difficult to do and quite expensive.
Mm-hmm.
So when we put this oil on and our body receives that information, it starts to go through processes to help either recover, bring more oxygen to the brain, feed nutrients to the right organ in the right way.
Mm-hmm.
We forget there's a whole communication, there's a whole school in our body of kids and teachers and principals all telling each other what to do and how to do it.
Mm.
And essential oils are one of the ways that I keep those communication between the cells coherent.
Mm.
So we say something is coherent. We usually say it's balanced. We usually say it looks good.
Mm-hmm.
It looks serene. It looks symmetrical.
Mm-hmm.
If you were to look at water under a microscope, you would see a crystalline structure.
Mm-hmm.
So water is basically a liquid crystal. When we freeze it, it turns into a snowflake of some sorts, right?
Mm-hmm.
Your cells are the same way. So the way that I mitigate perpetual downhill motion, entropy in my life,
mm-hmm.
is by trying to go the opposite way as much as possible. And it's not always doable.
Mm-hmm.
So some days I expend too much energy.
Yep.
Today is a lot of moving energy with people.
Mm.
And that means making change.
Mm-hmm.
And so I've got a tonic that I just picked up at Erewhon. They do a spirit tonic, which mm-hmm. has reishi, lion's mane, cordyceps, and a few other resistant Chinese herbs that are meant to replenish those drained stores from the day. So that's one of the tools I use. I also try and take breaks in nature. So we're blessed to be here in California. So anywhere I drive, there's parks all around me. I can stop, put my feet in the grass, sit down for 5 minutes.
Mm-hmm.
5 minutes makes a big difference.
100%.
And sometimes I can't. So I just, when I'm in a parking lot, I'll stare at a tree for a few minutes, close my eyes, meditate, listen to get some music.
Mm.
And meditation's a whole other topic.
This is one I want to touch upon right away.
Yeah.
So I probably in the past 2 days, in fact, I've had two people tell me to slow down. Mm. And one of them was our producer, Raph. And the problem with that is I just like going at speed. I feel like I'm more productive when I'm kind of kicking down doors, hurtling ahead at full throttle.
Slay through life, yeah.
Completely. I've got no time to slow down. I don't have time. In my mind, I'm like, no, this is what makes me that vitality that you speak of is a result of me going at speed. However, I'm fully aware that, I sometimes miss the mark on certain things. And so, probably for the next 4 weeks, I'm going to not necessarily focus on slowing down, but maybe just focus on being more thorough. But what could I do to perhaps, would it be worthwhile me looking at something like meditation?
Mm.
I've always really struggled with meditation.
Well, it's because everyone has a different opinion on what meditation is.
Mm.
I would say you're right. Why slow down if you're feeling good about it? Mm. Elon Musk just threw out a tweet. It said something like, I don't get any sleep or whatever. I just got back from the place where they make the cars, the factory. Mm. And then Arianna Huffington responded with, you don't get enough sleep. This is why you should get more sleep. You'd be a better leader, X, Y, Z.
Mm-hmm.
And then he responded, Tesla, Ford are the only companies who have not gone bankrupt. So I'm not slowing down.
Mm.
And so we look at that and we go, from the health coach, we're like, he's unhealthy. He's going to, he could hurt himself. And then there's the finance coach who's like, he's making a ton of money. Why should he stop?
Mm-hmm.
And then there's the mechanics who are working at the factory. They're like, we need a break, right? So there's a lot of pieces running around. Mm-hmm. And I think the best thing to do for anyone is to assess what pieces are going to make the biggest difference for you,
mm-hmm.
and what kind of collateral are you willing to create from it.
Mm-hmm.
So some of the greatest inventions in the world, if not all of them, have been created by people who are literally crazy.
Mm-hmm.
They didn't sleep. They had a really hard time living in what we would call reality.
Right.
Right. And so we have to redefine, in a way, I think, from a philosophical point of view, what success means.
Mm-hmm.
What does health mean?
Mm-hmm.
And what are you willing to, it's like you're gambling.
Yeah.
So it's like, what are you willing to throw down on the table?
Yeah.
And that's fun sometimes.
Mm.
So it's just like fear. Fear's not bad. It's used sometimes as a vehicle to move energy somewhere. Like, I want to create the business. I want to get healthy. Well, if I'm a little fearful about retracting, then maybe I'm going to follow through with it.
Mm.
So that's step one.
Mm-hmm.
Step two is, if you feel like meditation is something for you, which I highly recommend for anyone on this planet, we then have to look at, what are we doing while we're meditating?
Mm-hmm.
So a lot of what we're teaching in the Western world and what we're bringing from other types of cultures may not work for us because we're either A, not studied in that culture,
mm-hmm.
not interested in that culture,
mm-hmm.
or just don't know how to apply it in a healthy way to our lives. So the majority of people that I know who ask me, like, why should I meditate? When I ask them, what do you think meditation is? Mm-hmm. They say, to get my thoughts still.
Mm.
Or to literally get rid of my thoughts, throw a bomb in there and just let them explode. And that never works.
Mm.
The reason it never works is because there are thought forms everywhere.
Mm.
And on a different kind of similar subject,
mm-hmm.
We pick up feelings and thought forms from other people all the time.
Mm.
We say things the way other people say them. We may watch a news thing and then we may tell our our significant other, like exactly word for word what they said. Mm-hmm. And then it's like, we're trying to make it our own opinion.
Yep.
It's really someone else's.
Yep.
Or in fitness, we've all had coaches tell us something and then I'm replicating that.
Mm.
Sometimes it's helpful, sometimes it's not.
Mm-hmm.
So then the meditation is really, as far as I understand it, is self-awareness, mm-hmm. looking at ourselves and going, who's talking?
Mm-hmm.
And then you got to find the voice inside you that feels good.
Mm-hmm.
So there's a voice inside me when I meditate that's like, you got to pick up laundry. You've got to go get groceries. You feel like you forgot to like deposit three checks. You know,
so it's isn't like, that just like a rambling checklist of things
yeah,
to do?
But I know it's me because it feels good. It feels like you should write that down and go do that task.
Yeah.
But if I hear someone else and I'm like, that doesn't really sound like the way I would talk.
Yeah.
Then maybe it's like, just don't pay attention to it.
Mm-hmm.
And then just like let that slide.
Mm-hmm.
And there are techniques to help that process. The most basic would be like mindful meditation.
Yep.
And then mindful is like using imagination to help guide thoughts.
Mm.
So like I see a river and then those thoughts are on the river and they're passing me on the river and now I don't see those thoughts anymore.
Mm-hmm.
Or you watch a cloud dissolve. So nature can be very helpful in us engaging with what's happening inside here.
Mm.
And most people haven't practiced enough.
Mm.
And so therefore it never works out.
Mm-hmm.
So it took me many years to discover the voice that feels like me. Where do I begin? Where do others begin? Where do I end? Where do others end? And that's been a process that has been instrumentally helpful mm-hmm. in my career as well, because I'm touching people, and when you touch people, it changes. Touch a loved one, you can almost feel their energy. You can feel them. You feel their heartbeat. You may feel them breathe. That's a very profound experience.
Mm.
Now, when it comes to like performance athletes, we're not taught that stuff.
Mm.
We're just taught how to go past all of our edges. We're taught, you know, bypass all of that. We're just going to the top.
Completely. And I feel like it's bypass emotion and just go for the skill.
Correct.
Go for the kill.
Correct.
Go for the shot. Get there as fast as you can.
Yeah, that's not going to work out for us as a species.
in life, it's just a struggle. I think, you know, I think I've mentioned this before in previous podcasts, that kind of killer instinct is just literally my normal mode. It's like gear one for me, killer instinct.
Yeah.
And so if I'm in killer instinct mode, which is set to full speed, I find I'm either literally all on or completely off.
Yeah.
And so perhaps finding that balance, and to me, balance is sleep, weirdly. I feel like my mind is, you know, at peace and at rest just before I go to sleep at night.
Mm.
And that's the time when I guess I find stillness.
Hmm.
And which is quite interesting because
we may just call that you being tired.
Yeah. Bloody exhausted.
And the only reason I say that is because a lot of people say like, oh, I'm laying down, I'm falling asleep. I think I'm meditating.
Yeah. I think I'm meditating.
It's like, it's a version of meditation. You're becoming aware of your body.
Yeah. But weirdly, when I wake up, that vitality that you speak of is there.
Yeah.
And I feel rested and I'm like, okay. Time to start a new
How
day.
Often does that happen for you? Like, what percentage would you say that actually that occurs, that clarity?
Let's say out of 30 nights, I'd say 27.
That's impressive.
I'd say there are very few nights or few mornings that
I wake
up.
All your friends are telling you to slow down.
Yeah. There are very kind of few days where I wake up feeling groggy or like, you know, like I just can't get out. Like when I was competing and training, and, you know, exhausted every single day through physical activity, that was much harder.
Yeah.
But now, weirdly, I think because I have that mental stimulation, my mind is more alert than ever. And therefore, when I wake up in the morning, I'm raring.
Mm.
I'm like, literally, okay, what challenges are there? Throw them at me. Give it to me.
You've definitely got an athlete personality.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. What can I achieve today?
Mm-hmm.
That's literally what I wake up thinking.
Mm-hmm.
Mm. I don't feel I need to, like, slow down. Screw that. Full steam ahead.
Hey, it's your life.
Right.
You're
exactly.
Right. So if you feel like one of the workshops I run is called Removing Roadblocks to Success.
Mm-hmm.
And removing roadblocks to success is that success is already there.
Mm.
You've already achieved it by just you know, dreaming it.
Mm-hmm.
But now you have to go through the process of actually making step towards it.
Mm.
And as we make steps towards whatever our goal is, there are these things that show up that are these roadblocks.
Mm.
And some of them are there for us to learn lessons, which may pivot, and then we may see success in a different way.
Mm.
It's, we may get to a roadblock and say, oh, I need to go three steps back. I forgot something.
Mm.
So it's more, it's less of a linear process. Mm-hmm. I would say, and I don't know this exact percentage, but I would say at least 80% of the population on this planet is not getting good sleep. And that's probably higher. I'm using a low number.
Mm.
And I think a lot of that has to do with factors that they have no idea that are happening in their lives.
Mm.
We talked about it earlier. Like, it's not just about if you're eating organic food. It's about your relationship with food.
Mm-hmm.
It's not just, are you doing the right workout? It's what is your relationship with working out?
Mm.
It's not just what, you know, I'm going to get the perfect partner. It's like, you got to go through the work of being with that person.
Mm-hmm.
And if you want to be with them for a longer amount of time, you're going to have to work on mirroring each other.
Mm-hmm.
So I think there, it's like, I'm back to this relationship feeling topic, and it's a little touchy feely, but that's a process that I don't really think people are talking about.
Mm.
They maybe are in the psychosis field, or, you know, I want to be, there's this term, peak performance, right? Like, I got to be a CEO and I got to be at the peak value. And most of those people are type A personalities. They're like you and I.
Mm-hmm.
They were either an athlete at some point, and or they know how to work through things.
Yes.
And I don't think that that's the reality for everyone in this world. Everyone's different. I've touched thousands of people
mm-hmm.
through massage and personal training and just working with people one-on-one and meeting people and then not seeing them ever again.
Yep.
And every person's different.
Mm.
Every person has a different body.
Mm.
Every person has a different mind, a different way of working with their reality, their lens.
Mm.
When I went to massage school, they give you this big skeleton and they're told, you know, this is your bicep and this is your quad.
Mm.
And they show you and like, this is where it attaches.
Yep.
But it's like, that's one skeleton.
Right.
Right. Out of the millions of people and billions of people on this planet.
Mm-hmm.
And so
it's not uniform.
No. So when I see things like physical therapy and I see things, when I see practices that are focused on linear concepts,
yes.
I have a really hard time believing that the person who's teaching them really understands the bigger picture.
Because
that's what I found when I was working with these people. Athletes at a really high level, or just someone who has to, who's being paid to look a certain way.
Yep.
You can, Bruce Lee says, I'm not scared of the person who knows 1,000 punches. I'm scared of the person who does one punch 1,000 times.
Mm.
And there's really something to be said about what we're doing to create change.
Mm.
And it's like, yeah, I could tell you, you want a bigger chest? Do 100 push-ups a day.
Mm-hmm.
But then they start doing them and their biomechanics are off. They don't know how to breathe.
Yep.
It's like they're doing it at the wrong time of day.
Mm.
That's not good for them.
Mm-hmm.
Or they are, and they're super successful with it. And then they think they can apply that to everything else.
Yep.
So there's a whole different dynamic happening for each of us.
Mm.
And if we listen carefully enough, we are the ones who will understand ourselves best.
Mm.
I don't think that I can be understanding someone better than they understand themselves.
Correct. I don't know whether I told you that I wrote my training plan for the Commonwealth Games. So the one medal that I won in my career, I actually developed the training plan for it.
Wow.
I sat down and implemented different coaches to help me fulfill the training and the running. You know, I jumped in with a boys group and would basically do as much as I could. I felt I needed.
Yeah.
And in a good 12 months, just completely skyrocketed my performance and achieved the gold medal of my career just by listening to what I felt my body needed, as opposed to listening to a coach that was going to dictate. I felt like I'd learned enough from the coach to know how to kind of correctly periodize and plan and strategize my year.
Mm-hmm.
And then I just thought about, okay, if I think logically about what time I think I can realistically run in a 200 meters, that means I need to run 100 meters in this time, 150 meters in this time, 100 meters in this time, and 50 meters in this time. So I'm going to focus on running this 50 meters first. Then I'm going to focus on getting the speed over 100. And then I'm going to put it all together so that on that day, I've got the time that I need.
Mm-hmm.
I don't think we, I mean, what I find really, really fascinating, we've talked about this in the past, the relationship between trainer and client being very much a dance and also an exchange of energy and an exchange of information. What advice would you give to personal trainers, you know, other professionals in this space as to what you feel you've learned in terms of that energy exchange, in terms of looking at your client and listening to them and what their body needs in order that they get the best results? Mm-hmm.
There is no one modality that works best for a challenge that we're trying to overcome. That could be weight loss. Mm. That could be I have a knee injury. I've seen very, very successful coaches say it's top down. You should look at where the atlas is. You should see how their spine is going. I've seen other people who are at the top of their field say, no, it's from the center out. And then other people, it's bottom up.
Mm-hmm.
The relationship between the trainer and the client, practitioner, client, person, human, is that your body, your shoulder is going to move pretty much in the same way that mine is.
Mm-hmm.
So it's not a modality, it's your shoulder.
Mm-hmm.
So when we're really trying to help people, I see a lot of my way works best.
Mm-hmm.
And then there's a breakdown when things don't go that direction.
Mm-hmm.
It's really easy to convince a new client that what you're doing is going to be good for them.
Mm-hmm.
That's just called marketing and relationships and sales.
Mm-hmm.
It's really hard to follow through time and time again to give that to someone, to give them their freedom back.
Mm-hmm.
So my goal is I want to do the least amount of work possible.
Mm-hmm.
I want them to feel comfortable, like this is them. I don't need to be their trainer or their coach for life.
Mm-hmm.
Usually people who stay in my life long enough are because we enjoy a multitude of activities together.
Mm-hmm.
And there could be a relationship in there as far as coach and client.
Mm.
So if you have a particular modality that you are just like super focused in, whether that be like yoga or rehabilitation of a specific joint, like post-surgery or something, try and step back.
Mm-hmm.
Look at the whole person, because there's much more happening than just meat bag.
Mm-hmm.
It's not just pulley systems. Mm-hmm. And it's a whole organism. And if we look at the way that kinetic energy travels in the body, it's not linear either.
Mm-hmm.
It works in a vortex.
Mm-hmm.
So if you want to excel at a squat clean, you're going to have to get hip power. Mm-hmm. And that hip power comes from a circular action from the ground,
mm-hmm.
not two straight lines that go straight up.
Mm-hmm.
So when we look at the whole picture, it's like, yeah, that may look like it's stronger,
mm-hmm.
but if I weave into it, I can create torque.
Mm.
And that's something that martial artists were really engaged with.
Mm-hmm.
Now, that's a whole other topic, because where martial arts was most successful, especially mm-hmm. in its beginnings, those types of genetics don't fit where performance athletics is today.
Mm.
If you notice, if we like took baseball pitchers,
yep.
Japanese pitchers, Asian pitchers can pitch usually much longer.
Mm-hmm.
So they're usually starters because they can go further. Why? Because their body type fits a more flexible lifestyle, and that's what they're taught.
Mm-hmm.
So they do less weights, they do more stretching, more calisthenics.
Yep.
And so it just fits a specific need. So then the next kind of thing is like, know where your needs are and know where you can really help people.
Mm.
And then try not to put your hands in a place where it's not
they don't belong.
Your place to help. Yeah, yeah. I mean, I went through that too. I tried to help too many people that weren't in alignment with myself or mm-hmm. what I'm really offering. And then it just creates awkward energy.
Mm-hmm.
And I don't need that in my life. And they don't need that in their life.
Mm.
So I'm more than happy to tell someone, I'm not your person.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I have a ton of friends in this industry.
Mm-hmm.
There's someone who needs a new client and someone who is really going to match.
Mm-hmm.
And so I think that that's a business perspective that I've taken as well.
Yep.
And it's worked extremely well for me. And it also develops really good relationships.
Mm-hmm.
If the client really wants a female trainer and they really match that personality, it's like, Lou, please, I think you can really help this person.
Mm-hmm.
And I have found time and time again, and this is more of a meditative quality as well, more Zen, which is when you service the world in a way that feels really good for you.
The world.
Abundance is always there. Mm. It hasn't gone away ever. It's just about looking at it. I tell people, and I also help practitioners to mm-hmm. run their businesses. And
yep.
a big part of that is don't look at things in ones. Mm. Look at things in 12s, 24s. If that one client didn't work out, maybe the person behind them was your right client. And then you just talking to the original person mm-hmm. about how you work, the person behind them was listening.
Mm.
And when you're done having that consultation, they're going to come over and say, hey, I heard what you were saying, and it really resonated with me. Do you have time for a consultation or something?
Yeah.
And that's how I've developed really great relationships.
Mm.
And that way I don't take my work home with me either
mm.
because there's a mutual respect around the energy.
Mm. Talking about energy, where do you think, what do you think is the most exciting thing to enter the fitness world or the world of wellness? What do you think that we're going to be spending our time and energy on in, let's say, 2-3 years time? More so than we are now.
Yeah. Wow. There's such a slew of things. Well, I think we briefly touched this, and I don't want to talk too much about it, but the microbial world is just beginning to become a lens in which we're seeing how people are staying healthy into mm-hmm. their later years.
Mm-hmm.
And then we're looking at the communication between the cells
mm-hmm.
and communication, meaning like, I know my job, I know your job, we're going to work it together.
Mm-hmm.
It is a little kooky, but mm. the cells in our bodies they have personalities to a degree.
Mm.
And if things don't work right, then they'll make themselves lonely and not participate with the rest of the crowd.
Mm.
So I think we're starting to really understand that the emotional process is not one of mood.
Mm.
But also around our ability to recover
mm.
in a very quick amount of time
mm-hmm.
without all of the other substances that mm. are trying to flood our system.
Mm.
For instance, as an athlete, everyone's trying to get the edge. So they're taking all the vitamins, they've got the best nutrition.
Mm-hmm.
But once that nutrition is in your system, your body has to know what to do with it.
Yes.
And so, like we were talking about water earlier,
mm-hmm.
water's a liquid crystal. So if the water that goes into your system is not crystallized in a what we would call structured way, meaning symmetrical and beautiful,
mm-hmm.
You're taking on water that your body can't absorb.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. And so we're looking at now water, and there's tons of science on this as well. If you say, I love you on the water, mm-hmm. and you let it sit, it'll stay clean for a lot longer than if I put I hate you on the water.
Mm-hmm.
It'll start to develop mold, and there's tons of experiments done with this.
Mm-hmm.
So your body only receives what it can receive, what's congruent with it.
Mm. So this was something really interesting. I went to a popular gym on Sunday for a workout, and I have a real I'm such a fitness purist and an athlete purist that the thought of doing anybody else's training really freaks me out. And so I threw caution to the wind. And I hit up this local gym. They've got plenty of them around like Los Angeles.
Yeah.
And as well as participating in the class and improving it, on my opinion, I kind of kept my eyes open to see what was going on and, you know, in terms of how people were taking part in the class. And it was a group class, treadmills, dumbbells. So there was obviously a running section and then also a resistance training section and alternating between the two. And I can remember looking around the class and the thing you just said about what our bodies can and can't absorb was really interesting. There was a guy next to me who was listening to the trainer, constantly cranking up the treadmill, cranking it up. And he would literally jump to her every whim and her every heartbeat, everything she said, right, okay, up you go, one extra mile per hour, to the point where, and he must have stopped a good 4 or 5 times you know, literally had to stop on the treadmill, catch his breath and get back into, you know, his rhythm. And I noticed him watching me during the sessions, and I wasn't paying too much attention. I didn't really want to run on an incline, not used to that, more interested in just, you know, opening out my stride and being free. And so I did my own thing because I have that knowledge of training and I know what my body likes. And I kind of felt like this is a person who isn't listening to their body mm-hmm. and is pushing on regardless, just because it's what they're being told by an instructor who's been given one program that they didn't even design to deliver to 20 people in a room who are all at various different levels of fitness, and they're all expected to do the same thing and get something to go away from it. And I saw a number of people in the class really struggling and, you know, not making any results. Not necessarily making any results, but not making any changes, just doing it anyway, not being mindful of their body or their body positions. I remember there was one guy doing, I think it was a bench press and or something with a ball. And I just said, just put the ball down, do it without. Just do it body weight. And he did it, and he managed to get through a few more exercises and looked much more relieved because the stress and strain that was on his face. And I'm like, is there a time when we're going to understand that, you know, fitness training is very much a personal thing? And how does the average person communicate that to a trainer in a group environment or even just to a one-to-one personal trainer? How do they say when their body's not absorbing or reacting to it well? And how do we know as trainers that that person isn't reacting well?
They're very separate at the moment right now. Mm. SoulCycle, these gym classes, it's a business. Mm-hmm. Their main goal is to bring more people in. Mm-hmm. Their main goal is not, they may want you to be healthier. They may want you to be fitter, but there's no engagement with the process. Mm. Now, if we look at where do you get that process, mm-hmm. you'd say like, well, that's what we go to the doctor for. Mm-hmm. So then now we've swung the pendulum to the other side. Mm. And now it's like, but what does the doctor know about my relationships? Mm. And then we swung the pendulum over to the other side. Mm-hmm. And so where there's no harmonizing between. There are people out there who are blending. Mm. There are very few of them right now. And a lot of them are still shy because they're not entrepreneurs. They don't want to run a big business. And so you're just not seeing them, or people aren't seeing them. Mm. And those are the people that are taking things like Tai Chi, yoga, Qigong, and applying that to health and wellness. Mm-hmm. And the really only place you see that as a successful business, so that's what we're seeing in research and also seeing where people are focusing mm-hmm. is people over 60 mm-hmm. because those are the smashing people who are like, I'm done trying to smash life, and I'm just here trying to live
mobily long. Yeah, just mobile.
Right?
You know what, it was so funny, I was in a conversation the other day, and I just said, and I was sat down, me and my friend were stretching, it was just this morning, I was saying mobility every single time. Like, it doesn't matter what age you are, when you hit 50, 40, like 40, 50, 60, 70, you're going to be grateful that you practice mobility yeah. and movement, and that stick, you know, that stiff shoulder or that injury that you had, that you spent the time kind of working it out.
Yeah.
What, just finally, I want to know what, from a like massage, physical therapy perspective, what's the biggest thing you see from your clients? What's the biggest injury or the thing that people are struggling with the most? And is there a common theme, i.e. is it, you know, poor position sitting at desks or what?
Yeah.
Is there a pattern?
There's always a pattern. There's a lot of joint stuff for people. Mm-hmm. And we talk a lot about arthritis and osteoporosis. And there's a lot of like, I have knee issues, I have shoulder issues. And so if we go back to kinetic energy mm-hmm. moving through the body, right? If a football player hits the right shoulder mm-hmm. every time he hits, that inertia is going to swing over to his left hip. Mm-hmm. So he's got a left hip issue. People are looking at it and it's like, it's because he's in that position. Mm-hmm. I'm a right-handed, so I pitched yeah. left my whole life. Mm-hmm. So I've got a natural hip rotation. Mm-hmm. So there are regular things that are happening in our lives, and people tend to get stuck. Like, my knee hurts. Oh, what did I do? And it's like, it's not what you did, it's yeah. what you're not doing.
Yes.
It's thousands of times that you've landed that certain way.
On that one
foot.
And
then the kinetic energy just stops at your knee because mm-hmm. your knee is not able to functionally move it up into your core and then release it through mm. energy moving forward. You walk, that energy should give you propulsion to move forward.
Mm.
So if we're talking about all these different places, the joints, what rules the communication for the joints is the spine.
Mm.
So a healthy spine not only keeps you physically balanced, mm-hmm. but also all the electrical connections that are going from your brain to your organs to all of the other responders in mm-hmm. your body are through the spine.
Mm.
So if your spine is not healthy, you're going to have poor communication. You're not going to recover as quickly.
Mm-hmm.
You're not going to be able to function at a high level.
Mm.
And so we want to take care of our spine.
Give me your three top tips for spinal health.
Ooh. Well, basics, if anyone wants to take a yoga class, a Tai Chi class, a Qigong class, those are super effective. Those are modalities that have been used for thousands of years
mm-hmm.
that are very effective at keeping the spine nice and healthy.
Mm-hmm.
Now, we're on a radio show, so take that with a grain of salt. Not everyone knows what they're doing. And so it doesn't mean be cautious,
mm-hmm.
but know yourself enough to say, wow, yeah, that's exactly what's for me.
Mm-hmm.
And then also staying hydrated,
yep.
drinking good water.
Mm-hmm.
The spinal column has these jelly-filled disc pucks in between them. We call them discs.
Yep.
And those discs are very fluid-based, right? Mm. So when we sleep at night, our discs fill up with water.
Mm-hmm.
And so when we get up, we may feel like we're a little, you know, we're waking up, we're mm-hmm. stretching. That same type of stretching that we do in the morning, like we yawn.
Oh, yep.
Like, why aren't we doing that at 3 p.m.? Why aren't we doing that every time we yawn?
Mm.
Right?
Yeah.
So people are also cautious because they think everyone else is judging them. So it's like they stiffen up.
Mm.
And so it's like what I would tell people is if you want a healthy spine, be animated. Watch a child.
Mm.
Kids don't shut down and then stop.
Mm.
They move. Even if they're angry, they're angrily, they're moving their hands.
Mm, they're angry expressively.
They're very expressive.
Mm.
So some people are more expressive than others,
mm-hmm.
but a healthy spine is also someone who can express their emotions very clearly.
Mm.
We call that emotional intelligence.
Mm.
Now, I just made a connection from the body to our emotional process that some people may be like, how are those connected? But the energy is moving through your body, energy in motion. Emotion.
Mm.
So the feeling, it's like sometimes it's like, oh, I feel that. Oh, and you just kind of move and like I'm getting chills.
Mm-hmm.
My whole body is responding.
Mm.
And that is directed by the spine.
Mm-hmm.
One of my tea teachers said that if you cut off a plant's limb, you can replant that in another pot, throw it across the globe, and it'll grow.
Mm.
You cannot cut off a human arm and expect it to regrow.
Mm.
So consciousness lives in the spine.
Mm.
Our ability to feel ourselves is happening because your spine is in alignment.
Mm.
So you could say from the physical point of view, movement is very healthy for your spine, for your joints, and for your brain.
Mm.
From the emotional point of view, knowing yourself will help one to identify which emotions are yours, which are others, what are the lessons from those emotions. And then from the mental sphere, which is all the thoughts running in through our head, if we have a healthy spine, we can clearly understand like, oh, that thought means that direction, or that thought doesn't have any direction.
Mm.
And so meditation is a part of keeping the spine healthy as well, which is why ultimately we sit cross-legged, you know, or we sit in a chair, a comfortable position, and we sit with the straight spine.
Mm.
And that's also because we want to handle gravity really well. So I think it's 40 pounds for every inch or every 2 inches that that person is hunched over.
Mm.
It's a lot of weight.
40 pounds on the spine.
On the spine.
Or like so on one spinal.
Correct. So for every inch that you deviate from what we call the plumb line, which is that gravity line.
Down.
Yeah.
Ooh, that feels
correct. But you can't stay like this forever.
No.
So you need a little bit of fidgeting, a little bit of animation. I was sitting like this. My grandmother was talking. She's like, what are you doing? I was like, my spine needs to move. Mm. That's a foreign concept to her because I grew up in a space where I had the freedom to move my spine.
Yeah.
Nobody was telling me, stop fidgeting. It was like fidgeting is actually part of our body recovering and growing.
Mm-hmm.
When I have people on the table and they're in that last part of the massage, kind of like Shavasana, it's some cranial work, and we just get really still with the body starts flinching.
Yep.
You know, when you're sleeping and you're about to fall asleep and you flinch and you like see the bus or whatever, you feel like you're going to get hit. That's your brain resetting connections. So it's like we got a tired calf. We've been sprinting all day. Great. So at night, your body should go reset, reset. That's what a trigger point is. If you hit a trigger point hard enough, the brain kind of jolts it and then it sends a new connection.
Yeah.
And so this is a normal part of our living. I live when I go to sleep, when I wake up, when I'm with clients, I'm in the car meditating, I'm in the park meditating, and I'll just get quiet and then it'll flinch and breath. Those are normal things.
Mm-hmm.
And we're taught they're not normal. So I think when we're talking about the spine, let yourself be animated. Let yourself be expressive. See what it does. Yeah.
Darren, I think we're going to wrap there. That was beautiful. Thank you so much for coming on Slay Sunday. You absolutely nailed it.
Someone
say you slayed.
Thank you,
Darren. Thank you
for having me on, Lou. I appreciate it.
You're welcome.
Yeah.